From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. As of press time, the week is only halfway over, and yet it's been quite a busy one. From the firing of Rex Tillerson as U.S. Secretary of State, his replacement with now outgoing CIA Director Mike Pompeo, a new director at CIA, Britain's Prime Minister, threatening Russia's President Putin, and much more, we spoke with global analyst Mark Sloboda, based in Moscow, to try to sort it all out via Skype Wednesday. Well, Mark, let's see. I don't know where do we start?
Yeah, the world's going to hell in a handbasket. Thanks for having me, Don. It's always an honor and a pleasure to be on CPR.
Our pleasure to have you, too.
Where do you want to start, Don?
I don't know. Okay, so, I mean, for me, you know, I always like to look at, this is what we see. This is what they would call the apparent in philosophy. And this is what's actually going on, or the essential. And of course, the two are so unrelated in the modern age that it's almost impossible to divine one from the other, except to say that that which I see, all I can say about it is that is definitely not what's happening. So we're seeing Trump dismisses Secretary of State Tillerson, who was an early appointee, probably a very good one from the point of view of trying to stabilize the administration in the early days with the assault it was under, particularly on foreign policy. People tea leaf reading on what that means for U.S. policy. Did the deep state win some backroom game and now they're bringing in the generals? And I'd especially, on that particular point, like to get your perspective as a former military person, U.S. military, because, you know, here the perception is that if you have generals, you know, next to power, that somehow the U.S. is more militaristic. But in a society that has 800 military bases around the world, whether you have generals or diplomats or priests or nuns in charge, it's a militaristic society, and you know, with when your main export is weapons and or bombs personally delivered to a variety of locations on the planet, I don't know if having a general closer to the Oval Office makes you more or less militaristic. But we now have Pompeo and then the generals all around Trump, and what does this mean at first?
Yeah. First of all, I have to notice it is rather ironic, because if you remember in the closing days of the election campaign, Trump rather famously and rather loudly on Twitter and elsewhere attacked America's generals. He had big problems with them, and he was lambasting them left and right, and he was speaking in the plural, right, as in all of them. Then once he took office and he was trying to form his cabinet, I think there was there was so much fight back against so many of his nominees that he resorted to picking some of these very same generals. I mean, right. a unreasonable number of them.
A lot of them.
All right. A lot of them. And some of them still uniformed serving generals like McMaster, who is still in uniform serving as the national security advisor.
He did though during the campaign. He did have a couple of generals that he, you know, Flynn, one or two others that he held out as like, this is a good guy right here. You know, this is hero, etc. There were some, and then there's also, when he put the generals in, he was engaged in this, which he's still engaged in this fight with CIA, and so you have already on the ground before Trump, the war between the Pentagon and the CIA in Syria. So there's all that too.
Well, Flynn is of course rather interesting, character, because he was kind of a maverick, despite being appointed by the Obama administration to the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, and then he was kind of very quietly dismissed from that role towards the end of Obama's presidency, and then he went to the Trump campaign. He's a rather interesting character. He is not bound by establishment views across the board, although he is one of the biggest Iran hawks out there, although there's no shortage of those in the Trump administration. Pompeo
or the Congress,
Secretary of State,
the Congress, you know, for that matter too. you know, when they did a month or two ago, the sanctions, Iran was one of the three. They got 517 out of 535 in Congress. So the whole government's like that.
Yeah. So, as a former military, I do not approve of generals, certainly not the number that it are, in civilian roles in the government. Not at all. That has been a divide in U.S. politics. It has not always been strictly adhered to, but it has been kind of an unspoken, maxim of U.S. politics. Right. You know, that certainly having a general, recently having left the surface, much less someone named Mad Dog, a Marine general. Serving as the Secretary of Defense, as a former military veteran, I like the idea of a civilian serving as a head, as a counterbalance to the Joint Chiefs of Staff and so on. The whole mess of the Pentagon, on the other side of the Potomac. Right. So it makes me uncomfortable, and the number of generals, that surround Trump and by all intents and purposes control him. Right at this point, particularly on foreign and military policy, it's frightening. And this latest move with Rex Tillerson. Rex Tillerson is, I think, we have to be very, very nuanced with Rex Tillerson. First of all, Rex Tillerson was the CEO of Exxon, and being a person who's concerned about climate change and environmental destruction and everything, that would seem to make Rex Tillerson, at least in some respects, the equivalent of Lucifer, of Satan incarnate,
Darth Vader, whatever.
On the other hand, unlike Trump, Rex Tillerson clearly acknowledge climate change and that it is a problem.
Yeah, right.
There is that at least. Rex Tillerson, of course, was famous when he was first appointed, when he was first nominated, I should say, of being attacked, of being too close to Russia, because as the CEO of Russia of Exxon, he had numerous business dealings with Russian oil majors, including Sechen at the head of Rosneft, very close to Putin, having met Putin before, and even having been awarded the Order of Friendship of the Russian Federation by Putin, no less. Now this is. Let me tell you, first of all, this is really overblown. Rex Tillerson, is an American, and he certainly did rise, if there was any question, whose side he was on, that has, very should have been quickly dismissed.
Right.
He was certainly no great friend to Russia during his last year year in office. It's only been a year, I guess.
Right.
But that was one of the principal reasons that he was attacked during the nomination process, and that he was a Russian stooge, and this was all part of Putin's plan. He was a Russian puppet, and Trump was a Russian puppet, and so on.
As absurd as that is, the CEO of ExxonMobil, not generally your average Pinocchio. Okay, you have the largest corporation in the world, I think, right? Still ExxonMobil?
Yeah, still ExxonMobil.
Okay,
yeah.
They make you CEO, you bring in record profits, you maneuver around the globe. I mean, and of course you're talking to Russians that have oil and gas reserves, maybe, huge ones. It's like if you're the CEO of McDonald's, you're talking to cattle ranchers and soybean farmers and whatever else, because that's the business.
And Russia.
Right, okay.
And the Russian government.
Oh, again, right, because they do that too,
They need to be here. Believe me, there are McDonald's everywhere here.
And Argentina, and whatever. So, all of that is obviously nonsense. They were trying to, tie him into the Russian narrative that was being woven.
He's a businessman, and he's a pragmatist.
Right. But also, like a businessman extraordinaire, that being my point. Like, if there's somebody that's not going to be the puppet of some government official somewhere, if you're going to pick and choose out of the general population, I would start with the CEOs of major corporations who are more likely the puppeteers than the puppets.
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly, yes. I mean, there is that he had his own interests and the interests of his class of people,
right.
You know, being global oil and oligarchy right. and so on. But it's rather ironic that he was pilloried as a Russian puppet when he was hired. But when he was fired yesterday,
right.
this the public announcement of it coming right on the heels, hours of his coming out and accepting the British narrative of this poisoning of this British double agent,
right.
Supposedly by a Soviet-produced nerve agent, Novichok, right. which the British government, without any evidence, is blaming just on Russia
right.
simply by the fact that the weapon was produced in the Soviet Union, never mind that it spread to, you know, all the major powers of the world have access to that at this point.
Yeah, right.
And many not major powers and so on, but now that is being called as because he said that he's been fired because he was too harsh on Russia.
Right.
So he goes. The narrative shifted in 1 year from being too soft on Russia and Putin's puppet to he was being fired because he was fighting back against Trump on Russia.
Right. In other words, Putin's puppet Trump fired the Tillerson for saying bad things about him.
Now, there is a very confused narrative going back from numerous, of the major U.S. publications, the Washington Post, AP, and others, about how actually Tillerson was fired. Of course, it's been talked about for months now.
Right.
But and some a lot of the Russiagate conspiracy theorists are jumping on this thing about Russia. But evidently, he was told twice in the last week that he needed to step down, and that if he didn't, there would be an announcement. This is the latest coming from AP now. Mm. It's still murky on the details, but he cut short a trip to Africa last week, claiming he was ill, but it seems that this was actually the reason. And there's some question of whether he received the final official word in Trump's rather public and crass, I think very undignified. Whatever you may think of the man, right? You know, you don't fire a U.S. Secretary of State with a tweet, right? It's not done.
Yeah.
And so that's a poor show there. As someone who generally supports Russia's foreign policy position via the United States, I have to say that, you know, Rex Tillerson's time in office, he was no particular friend of Russia. And,
right.
and you know, I disagreed with Rex Tillerson on many issues. But like I said, I think we have to take a nuanced view of him. He was presiding over huge budget cuts, which are necessary. The State Department was bloated and was spending and involved in so many redundant organs that were also being performed by intelligence agencies that the State Department had no business doing, was so involved in military's policy and other things. And and of course, this sacred cow of democracy promotion with the National Endowment of Democracy.
Which is also intelligence, basically, really.
It's the CIA. It's meddling.
That's right.
It's meddling in let's be honest. It's meddling in other countries' affairs. Exactly. What
right.
you know, the whole Russiagate narrative has been screaming against.
Right.
How dare someone else do? You know, and Carnegie Mellon, you know, in the last couple of years, put out a report detailing how the United States, only up till 2000, not counting all of it since 2000,
right.
and not counting coups and regime changes, coups and overt regime changes, military intervention, the U.S. interfered in 81 elections
right.
around the world.
Right.
Right. And that's only up to 2000. I think the number only skyrocketed since then.
Right.
So, there's that narrative there. I was pleased to see the budget cuts to the National Endowment for Democracy. The neocons and the Russiagate crowd were going crazy
right.
in the Congress. So he was no friend of Congress. He didn't have many supporters there because of that and because of his overseeing the staff and budget cuts in other areas of the State Department. But I did. I think the State Department was bloated. I think it was involved in clandestine activity, which is what
obviously.
National Endowment for Democracy, U.S. aid, you know, being involved, being caught red-handed in several attempts to destabilize and overthrow the Cuban government just during Obama's terms.
I mean, I don't know. Is this claim even controversial? I mean, you look at the, you know, the revolving door between the people at the State Department and the various NGOs like, you know, Amnesty and all of that, who generate these human rights reports, you know, targeting the same people the State Department and the CIA are targeting. Here's a report now from, you know, Victoria Nuland, who's now with, you know, Amnesty or whatever watch, Human Rights Watch. Oh, they're a bad guy. Okay, go get him. In the military, but, you know, it's like, it's all one team. It's like watching a hockey team.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about the facts, but it is still considered not done to actually acknowledge the facts,
right,
and to discuss them and discuss the import and the context and everything. It's this 15-minute memory. They might recognize them, but then they forget them, and that they don't intend. The journalists never include them in, you know, their overall assessment of comparative, you know, international events. What's going on?
I mean, the relevant part of it, though, is here is that this is what Tillerson is up against. It's really one enemy. Part of it is under his employ on his payroll, and another part is out there trying to take down the president and trying to promulgate a foreign policy from the last administration, regardless of what Tillerson or the president intend, particularly with respect to Russia.
You brought up the whole human rights thing, which I think is another important thing, that Tillerson just blanket refused to at least as loud, anywhere near as loudly as his predecessors, use human rights to weaponize, you know, the issue of the U.S. hypocritically yelling about other countries' human rights, and of course only its enemies, not its allies like Saudi Arabia and so on, and to use that as a tool, weapon, you know, of foreign policy, of public propaganda.
Right.
He just didn't do it. And that really annoyed a lot of people in Congress, you know, that are in the democracy promotion business. It annoyed the neocons. In fact, in the State Department's annual report against Russia and China, where it, you know, lambasts them for their, you know, presumed human rights violations, he didn't even attend.
Right.
And there has been the leaked memo where there was literally senior people within the State Department were basically informing him and his staff, look, this is what we do with human rights. Literally, we use it as a tool, as a weapon to, you know, attack our enemies, and we don't talk about it with our allies. I mean, that it was that explicit. Like they had to explain it to him, and he wasn't doing it. And I find that, you know, that's understated role that you know, his handling of being Secretary of State, his quiet, pragmatic go about do business of review. I found it refreshing after John Kerry.
It's real. It's a real business person. I mean, again, this is one of the things that gets me watching commentators, for example, people who really do nothing but either read off of a teleprompter or read out of their memory of the teleprompter life that they led, you know, working as a functionary somewhere, talking about Tillerson when he's looking at this stuff and understanding it and dealing with it as a peer at least. Okay, he was a former CEO of ExxonMobil, going into these meetings knowing as much as about what's going on as anyone in the room, and having these functionaries mock him as being ignorant because he doesn't take briefings from people that he probably wouldn't hire to serve him coffee in the private sector.
Now, I agree with you. I think he was, you know, one of the adults in the room, as it were, holding Trump's hand, and he was probably being, all things being relative, one of the best of those.
Right.
You know, he disagreed with Trump on numerous things, which is why he was fired.
Yeah.
But he didn't do so publicly. He didn't make a political stink about it. He disagreed on Qatar. He disagreed on trade. He disagreed on climate change. He disagreed on North Korea. I mean, that's the long list. I mean, it goes on and on, you know, of why he was fired at, you know, at the end. It's been, you know, been talked about for months. And it has to be said that he's not the only one. Steve Goldstein, the Undersecretary of State, who immediately came out and tried to challenge the White House version of the exact circumstances of how Tillerson was fired. He was immediately fired then as well, hours later.
Yep.
And there are lots of rumors floating all around of other major changes, whether any of these will come to be true or not. But there's talk about Kelly, right, the general who is the chief of staff. Evidently, Trump is very not happy with him. Evidently, Kelly, among other things, it restricts which websites he's allowed to look at, and you know, Breitbart not being one of those, and so on. Whatever you may think of Breitbart.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's almost like he's, you know.
Or of the rumors, but yeah.
When
yeah.
he's allowed to tweet and what right. he's allowed to tweet and right, so right. on. I don't know how much actual control he has of that. It's that, questionable.
That, yeah.
But also McMasters, who evidently there's been a report out in Foreign Policy, who has personality conflicts, being a 3-star Army general with Kelly and Mattis, who are 4-star Marine generals, and evidently it ended up, rather than being a perfect cabal of being some kind of personality conflicts, ego conflicts between the three of them. So there's talk about him leaving, that wasn't leaving.
Right.
And evidently Tillerson and Mattis had a very good relationship. They evidently started each week meeting each other and talked to each other 3 times a day. And they made a very big show of always going into the Oval Office with state and defense on the same page, as they put it. So
you know, that's a
anyway,
grown-up approach.
That's done.
You know, you're looking at maybe. I mean, and let me ask you this: could we be looking at? I mean, you know, you have this first year and change where Trump has got to basically get the lay of the land, and where he was under massive attack. You know, all kinds of traps were set for foreign policy with the firing of all those diplomats, and you know, a whole bunch of stuff that went on at the end, bombings and whatnot. Is it possible that after a year of putting, say, you know, he's had Tillerson holding it down at state so no catastrophes happened, any good analysis, even if I don't agree with the conclusions,
yeah,
et cetera, could Trump be reaching a point where he thinks, okay, fine, I think I have a pretty good idea how this stuff all works now. Let me put my people in place and start road testing it. Do you think that's where we are?
I don't know. Who are we replacing him with? Mike Pompeo,
right,
who just comes from the director of the CIA. He's a neocon,
right,
among neocons. He is, you know, I think it's fair to say, an Islamophobe.
Yeah.
He is a Russia hawk. He's very hawkish against Russia. And he is a downright frothing, rabid warmonger on Iran.
Right. Other than that, what's your problem?
Yeah, yeah. With him, as you know, he equates Iran to ISIS. Never mind the fact that they're diametrically opposed.
Right.
And
yeah, right.
And you know,
well, in his defense, so does the U.S. court system. I mean,
yeah,
if you look at the lawsuits over 9/11, and there's another one where some survivors just brought a lawsuit with naming both Saudi Arabia and Iran as parties defendant.
But that of course, the absurdity of that when Saudi Arabia and Iran are regional hegemonic opponents of
right.
the tallest order,
right.
representing entirely different and violently opposed strains of Islam.
Right.
You know, Shia and Sunni on the one side, the whole divide
and
there.
And geopolitics, by the way.
And right. geopolitics, yeah. Well, I think if you take a look at the U.S.'s own list of terrorists, and you see that there is only one or two on that whole list that in any – Hezbollah being the major – that can be in any way linked to Iran. And it has to be noted that much of the world does not consider Hezbollah a terrorist organization. All of the other organizations on that list are linked to Saudi Arabia.
Right.
So, who's the biggest supporter of terrorists?
Right,
the U.S.
Right,
ally that we
right,
are.
Right,
but,
right.
you know, that's clear from the U.S.'s own records. Yeah, but so I'm not getting a warm fuzzy from Mike Pompeo replacing
right.
The Secretary of State. Even more disturbing is who replaces Mike Pompeo. And this is Gina Haspel.
No.
She is the deputy director of the CIA. She's a woman. She's the first woman, you know. Wow, what a great belated Women's Day president. We have a woman to head the CIA. Not just any woman, but a woman who operated one of the Bush-era black torture sites
right.
in Thailand.
Right.
She was an undercover for a good part of her role. Then she ran this torture site. Not only did she run the site, But according to The Intercept and according to these CIA documents that were released via WikiLeaks, she literally tortured, hands-on tortured two detainees. One of the detainees was waterboarded 83 times, right? And had his hands repeatedly beat against walls for hours and numerous other gruesome punishments until it was determined that he actually had no useful information. Now, not only did she run these sites, and torture is a war crime, right?
Yeah.
Torture, it's a war crime. And no one in the U.S. government above the rank of a few people in the low-level military people who were caught in Abu Ghraib up to what amounted to torture shenanigans, stupidly taping themselves do it. No one in U.S. intelligence was ever punished for any of this. There was no accountability. Mm. There was no justice. There was nothing. In fact, Gina Haspel was promoted. She was first deputy director of the CIA. Now she is being nominated for the director of the CIA, a torturer, not just running torture, a hands-on torturer.
Yeah, right.
Is the director of the CIA. She has never repudiated torture. Mike Pompeo, by the way, is in favor of torture. He doesn't consider waterboarding and these other things to be torture. I suggest he subject his children to that. Then, right? And we know that Trump also thinks that torture is a great idea. Well, so, it will be very laughable to if we have Mike Pompeo, go back to the U.S. State Department practice of screaming about human rights in one hand while praising torture.
Right, exactly.
In the other. Yeah. Right? Well, I mean, but in a way, it's so perfect.
Yeah,
think
is.
About it.
Well,
it perfectly illustrates the hypocrisy, right there. But this Gina Haspel, I think it is the most, it should be the most disturbing to Americans that she is now being dominated and will probably be approved. I don't expect the Democrats to offer more than a token voice of caution,
right?
During the nomination hearings,
they'll savage her so and tag Trump with it, but then they'll let her get.
They'll get it just like just like they let through. They call Trump a tyrant, and then approve increased surveillance powers.
And then
continue to authorize the 2001-2003 authorization of military force,
right,
which the U.S. has used as an excuse to maintain a constant war throughout the Middle East for the last 15 years. But Trump is a madman and he's a tyrant, but let's continue to make sure he has that power, right? Well,
okay, so we've got like a minute left and we haven't really even touched what's going on in the UK and all of that. So.
No, that's just insanity at this point. There's no evidence that Russia is involved other than this chemical agent, which we know. The whole basis of it is that it was produced in the Soviet Union in the late 70s. It's a nerve agent, supposedly 10 times more powerful than VX. It's kind of still kind of a hush-hush thing. Not much is known about it, except that the guy who developed it is a defector living in the United States, right. And the U.S. helped Uzbekistan in the early years of the breakup of the Soviet Union dismantle the production facilities for it. So the U.S. has it.
Right.
The U.K. has admitted that they have it because that's how they positively identified what it was.
Exactly.
Because British papers said they have samples of it that they acquired via clandestine means. We know that the Ukraine has it, right?
Yeah.
At the very least among the other post-Soviet states. And I mean, what greater motivation to continue to receive Western support for the war against their own people in the Donbass and to continue to demonize Russia than to kill off a 66-year-old British double agent who had already served years in prison, was caught, had served years in prison. Nothing was done to him. They released him in a prisoner swap. He lived in the UK for a decade.
Well, it's austerity. He's just starting to draw his pension. Let's save the money. Look, we got to stop here because we're out of time. Maybe Friday we can get into this because I would really like to look at – you have all these moving parts right now and a presidential election on Sunday. And I'm wondering if one of these moving parts isn't going to try to blow up to have some kind of an impact, or maybe several of them, to try to have some multiple impacts on the elections. Maybe
sure, I'm sure they're trying lots of these things, but it won't have the reaction they wanted.
I agree with that. Cool. All right, so we'll talk again later this week. Mark, thank you very much. Pleasure.
Thanks always. For having me, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.